Right, friends, a very hearty welcome. Hearty welcome? Sure, why not? A hearty welcome to Daily Power Parsha. Today is Monday, April 12th, 2021. And we're going to start our discussion of the Torah portion this week, which is actually Torah portions this week. We got a double header, which is always a ton of fun. Two for the price of one. What a deal. Which Jew doesn't like a deal? I'm not making stereotypes. I'm just saying, I'll take two without a problem. God says to Moses, I have a tablet for you. And Moses says, I'll take two. That's how that happened.
He took four.
He did take four. He broke the first few. Although he had a warranty exchange, whatever. He kept the receipt, that whole thing. All right, let's do this. Let's jump straight into the topic. Tazria Metzora. This is a very heavy on ritual purity and impurity. I think I mentioned at the beginning of the book of Leviticus, it's considered to be a pure and holy book. That's why kids typically start with Leviticus. Talks about the sacrifices, talks about the offerings, the Mishkan, the tabernacle. Okay, there's some drama and, you know, the death of Nadav and Avihu that are maybe not such kid-friendly themes. But in general, this book talks a lot about holiness, holy things, including ritual purity and impurity, which is a major topic of this week's conversation. So, without further ado, let's begin. I'm going to share my screen with you, and let's jump right in. Can you see Torah reading for Tazria Metzora? Yes. Okay. Leviticus chapter 12, verse number 1. Here we go. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a woman conceives and gives birth to a male, she shall be unclean for 7 days. As in the days of her menstrual flow, she shall be unclean. And on the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. Here we have the reiteration of the mitzvah of Brit Milah. I'm going to speak about the verse 2 and the other verses soon, but just in middle of this discussion about the mom's purity and impurity, we have a conversation about Brit Milah, right? If a boy is born the eighth day, circumcision. And for 30 days she shall remain in the blood of purity. She shall not touch anything holy, nor may she enter the sanctuary, the temple, until the days of her purification have been completed. And if she gives birth to a female, she shall be unclean for 2 weeks, like her menstruation period, and for 66 days she shall remain in the blood of purity. And when the days of her purification have been completed, whether for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring a sheep in its first year as a burnt offering, and a young dove or a turtle dove as a sin offering, to the entrance of the tent of meeting to the Kohen. And he shall offer it up before the Lord and effect atonement for her, and thus she will be purified from the source of her blood. This is the law of a woman who gives birth to a male or to a female. I'm going to explain all this. And if she cannot afford a sheep, she shall take two turtle doves or two young doves, one as a burnt offering and one as a sin offering, and the Kohen shall effect atonement for her, and she shall become clean. And the question that everybody asks and everybody's wondering is, what's going on here? A woman gives birth, so she's unclean? And then we have an offering that is considered a sin offering. What's sin? What are we? A child? A sin? Impurity? What's going on here? So here's one way of understanding this. Certainly, the things are lost in translation. So when we understand this thematically, then hopefully it should make sense. And this is something that I've shared before in other classes, but it's something that's important to reiterate and to emphasize once again, and that is that purity and impurity in Judaism is not clean and unclean or good versus bad. It's not a value judgment. It's a reality. And when I say reality, it's a reality that is triggered by life versus an absence of life. So life constitutes holiness, and an absence of life life constitutes purity. I said the wrong word. I said holiness. I meant purity. Purity and absence of life constitutes impurity. So it's not good or bad. It's just life versus absence of life. So that's why we saw last week when you have an animal carcass, it can trigger impurity to something else that it touches. Or if a person comes in contact with a dead animal, so they are rendered impure for that day. And if something impure, sorry, if something dead, a dead animal or bird carcass falls into a bowl, all the contents of that bowl are rendered impure, right? We said that at the end of last week's Torah portion. And what that means is that impurity is triggered by death or by any absence or loss of life. And in a very similar way, we find this with regards to all forms of purity. So for example, the impurity of a man who has a seminal discharge, right? So that renders the man impure. Why? Because there's this potential for life, right, that is now discharged from the body, that renders a person impure. Or you have, for a woman, the idea of menstruation, which again is a potential for life, and the absence of which renders a state of impurity. Again, it's not a bad thing, it's just an absence or a displacement on any level, subtle or not subtle, of life triggers a state of impurity to various degrees. Therefore, and this, I'm sure I explained this last year as well, but it's been a year on this Torah portion. Therefore, a woman who gives birth, although that's a wonderful thing and a wonderful simcha, etc., but nonetheless, it triggers a state of impurity. Why? Because she was carrying life inside of her, and now she no longer is carrying that life inside of her. Now, wait a second, you're going to say, but the child is born, and now the life continues outside of her. Yes, but vis-a-vis her body, there was an additional life inside, and now now that life is no longer inside. That triggers a state of impurity. Again, we have to strip impurity from an association with something negative. It's not negative. It's just an absence, even ever so subtle, of life. And so this explains why the period, the time of impurity that's incurred or that results from giving birth to a girl is double the amount of time than giving birth to a boy. Why? Because when it comes to a boy, so she was carrying life, and now the life is no longer inside of her, so it's a state of impurity. But when she's carrying a girl, she's carrying a life that also has a potential for life. You with me? Right? A girl has a potential to also, theoretically, carry life inside of her, even though she's just a baby and fetus, whatever. But there's a double potential there. So that's why the time period of impurity is doubled. Anyway, the point is that Judaism is fiercely sensitive to life and its absence, and thus it's very telling that we have these laws of purity and impurity to remind us about the sanctity of life and how we have to notice the absence of life in any form. I've mentioned this many times before, but again, it's themes that bear repeating. That Judaism is a religion that advocates for life, and it's very sensitive to life. There are many philosophies and many ideologies and many religions that glorify death, where martyrdom, you know, giving up one's life or killing oneself for a cause is considered to be, you know, the highest achievement. And Judaism typically does not take that approach. The highest level is living a life and doing the right thing. It's not giving away one's life. That's not the highest level. That was the lesson from last week. Nadav and Avihu, right? The two sons of Aaron that lost their lives because they were so spiritually supercharged and that their souls lifted out of their bodies. That's not the ideal. The ideal is that the soul is in the body and it's doing what it needs to be doing. Anyway, that's the idea of Judaism fiercely promoting life and noticing and having a mechanism for any sort of absence of life, whether it's for a man or for a woman, whether it's death or childbirth, either way, There is a state of purity and a state of impurity, but it's certainly not, you know, good versus bad, or, you know, clean versus unclean. Even if that was somewhat of the translation, that's not what it, that's not what it actually is. Okay, let's jump back into the text. Let me double check this over here. And boom. Here we go. We did the first little portion, little section over here, the first eight verses about childbirth. Now we get into the affliction of tzaraat, which is the biblical form of leprosy. When I say biblical form of leprosy, it's not exactly leprosy as much as it is a spiritual skin ailment that is the result of a spiritual impropriety. Typically, there are many different causes brought down amongst the commentaries and our sages' teachings, but primarily, the tzaraat was due to the sin of gossip, of lashon hara, of speaking ill of someone else. So speaking ill of someone else typically triggered the tzaraat. All right, let's welcome Sandrine, welcome, and Matt, welcome. It's great to have you guys. Welcome, welcome. All right, Leviticus chapter 13, verse number 1. Wow, that's a really short chapter. Chapter 12 was really short. You notice that? It's 8 verses. All right, it's usually, chapters are usually longer than that. All right, Leviticus chapter 13, verse number 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, if a man has a se'eth, or in the Hebrew it's se'et, or a sapachat, or a baheret, these are different types of discolorations on the skin of his flesh, and it forms a lesion of tzaraat on the skin of his flesh, he shall be brought to Aaron the Kohen, or to one of his sons, the Kohanim. So again, a person has this skin condition, you would think, go to a doctor, go to a dermatologist. No, go to the priest. What's the priest going to do? Well, he's got this great cream. No, the priest is well-versed in diagnosing tzaraat, which we'll talk about soon and talk about why a Kohen specifically, etc. But we'll get there in a second. Let's keep on reading. The Kohen, so what should the Kohen do? The Kohen shall look at the lesion on the skin of his flesh. And if the hair in the lesion has turned white, and the appearance of the lesion is deeper than that, than the skin of his flesh. So again, you have a discoloration on the skin. So the Kohen examines it. And if the hair inside that area of the lesion has turned white, and the lesion looks, again, it's not physically, but it looks deeper than the skin of the flesh, it is a lesion of tzaraat. When the Kohen sees this, he shall pronounce him unclean. So if these two things are there, the hair turns white, the hair has turned white, and the lesion looks deeper than the skin of his flesh, then that is, I know we use the word unclean, and I just railed against that, it is what it is. It's tame, it's impure. In other words, he has it, he's got tzaraat. But, verse 4, if it is a white baharet on the skin of his flesh, and its appearance is not deeper than the skin, and its hair has not turned white, well, then it might be tzaraat. So what do you do? I hope this doesn't trigger anybody. The Kohen shall quarantine. We've learned a lot about quarantining over the last year. The Kohen shall quarantine the person with a lesion for 7 days. So what that means is the person might have tzaraat. It's not yet clear and obvious based on the skin and the hair in that area. It's not clear that it's tzaraat, so it's pending another examination in 7 days. So we tell that person, look, you might have tzaraat, which means you should not mingle with the public, because then you're going to render other people that you come in contact with potentially impure. So you don't want to do that, right? Because impurity can be transmitted from person to person. Therefore, quarantine for 7 days. And on the seventh day, the Kohen shall once again see and examine the person. And behold, the lesion has remained the same. Now, if the lesion has remained the same in appearance, the lesion has not spread on the skin. So basically, essentially, it's the same as it was 7 days ago. So, second round of quarantine. So the Kohen shall quarantine him for 7 days a second time. Again, we got to flatten the curve here. No, I'm kidding. We have to figure out, is this actually tzaraat? Is it not tzaraat? So it looks like it might be, but we're not sure. So you quarantine for 7 days. Comes back, still not sure. Quarantine for another 7 days. All right, here we go. Now, 14 days later, the Kohen shall see him on the 7th day a second time. And behold, so now, if the lesion has become dimmer, right? If it's less pronounced and the lesion has not spread on the skin, so after 14 days of this quarantine and examinations, if it's going down, the Kohen shall pronounce him clean. Tahar, pure. You may break your quarantine. It is a mispachat. I love how it's not translated here. It is considered to be a mispachat, which means not tzarat. He shall immerse his garments and become clean. However, if the mespachat spreads on the skin, right? So this was all considering verse 6 was after the second quarantine, right? The lesions become dimmer and it has not spread, then it's pure. However, verse 7, if the mespachat spreads on the skin after it's been shown to the Kohen for its purification, right? If it's getting bigger, Then it shall be shown to the Kohen a second time. The Kohen shall look at it, and behold, the mispachat has spread on the skin. Right? So in our case, just resetting the scenario, fellow notices something on the skin, goes to the Kohen. Kohen says, don't know, could go either way. Come back in 7 days. 7 days, still kind of the same, but then it looks like it's getting worse. Comes back. The Kohen sees that it's spread on the skin. So the Kohen shall pronounce him unclean. It is tzaraat. So if it spreads after the quarantine or during the quarantine, then it is not clean. It is not just mispachat. It's considered tzaraat. It's considered to be the skin ailment that needs a process. All right. Let's continue. If a man has a lesion of tzaraat, he shall be brought to the Kohen. As we said before, the Kohen shall look at it. And behold, now here's another example. There is a white se'et on the skin. And either it has turned the hair white or there is healthy live flesh in the se'et. So he says, the Torah says, it is an old tzaraat on the skin of his flesh, and the Kohen shall pronounce him unclean. He need not quarantine him because he is unclean. In other words, and again, what the exact skin looked like, we would probably need a bit of a dermatologist image gallery. But the point is, in this other example, this case, the Kohen sees it and doesn't have a question that it is tzaraat. So in that case, there's no need for quarantine because it's clear that he's unclean. And if the tzaraat has spread over the skin, whereby the tzaraat covers all the skin of the person with the lesion, from his head to his feet, wherever the eyes of the Kohen can see it, then the Kohen shall look at it, and behold, the tzaraat has covered all his flesh. He shall pronounce the person with the lesion clean. He has turned completely white, he is clean. Now, you might be thinking that's totally counterintuitive. If a little white patch or little form of tzaraat renders a person impure, so how could the whole body be covered with tzaraat? How could that be clean? Right? That's essentially what these last two verses are saying. If it's spread over the skin, covering all the skin of the person, from his head to his feet, right? And the Kohen sees it. It's covered all of his flesh. So then you would think, obviously impure. No, the Torah goes the old double reverse fake. It says, no, this is fine. This is clean. This is pure. What does that mean? So there are different ways to explain it. Again, I was planning on just motoring through some of these verses and then going back, but I'll just jump in right here with this idea. You know, if a person, the whole idea of tzaraat was that it was a spiritual ailment that was meant to teach a spiritual lesson. It was meant to be a wake-up call. Hey, I'm gossiping too much, hence my skin. All right, let me cut back on the old gossip, on the lashon hara. And therefore, we say that a person who gets a little mark on the skin needs to take it seriously and correct their ways, and is deemed unclean until they do so. But if a person has a tzaraat over the entire body, then you can't ignore it and you can't hide it. And so it's a wake-up call even without the Kohen's pronouncement of being impure. In other words, if the tzaraat is covering the whole skin, where are you going to hide? It's clear and obvious. It's like, whoops, I've been gossiping. And that will be a wake-up call. So if it's the more subtle the sign, the more attention needs to be paid to it, the more superimposed attention needs to be paid to it. Whereas if it's obvious, then it's going to be taken care of, obviously. Which teaches us a lesson in life, and that is we have to be more careful with the subtle things than with the bigger things. Not that we don't have to address the bigger things, we do, but they're almost easier to address because they're so big. Let's continue. That's where the Kohen can pronounce it clean, because the person will clean up their act anyway. Next, 14. But on the day that live flesh appears in it, he shall become unclean. You see, if it's totally white, well, then it's clean. But if live flesh appears in it, in other words, like healthy flesh, well, then that triggers the impurity. When the Kohen sees the healthy live flesh, he shall pronounce him unclean, because now you have healthy flesh together with some white. So now it's not all white, now it's some and some, and therefore it's unclean. The live flesh is unclean, it is tzaraat. But if the healthy live flesh once again turns white, he shall come to the Kohen, and the Kohen shall look at it, and behold, the lesion has turned white. The Kohen shall pronounce the lesion clean, he is clean. Okay, next, verse 18. If a person's flesh has an inflammation on its skin, and it heals, and on the place of the inflammation there is a white se'et, or a reddish white beheret. We really need pictures, but I don't know that I would want to look at the pictures, but either way. But that would probably clarify it. It shall be shown to the Kohen in these instances. These are specific instances of skin discoloration and other skin ailments that are suspected to be of spiritual origin. So the Kohen shall look at it. Once again, the Kohen looks at it, and behold, its appearance is lower than the skin, and its hair has turned white, which we said before are two signs of impurity. So, right, it seems like lower, just optical illusion, it's lower, it looks lower than the rest of the skin, and the hair inside that area of the lesion has turned white, or the inflammation in this case. So the Kohen shall pronounce him unclean, impure. It is a lesion of tzaraat that has erupted on the inflammation. So there's an inflammation, but then there's these other things. It looks deeper, and there's white hair, tzaraat. But if the Kohen looks at it, and behold, it does not contain white hair, nor does it appear to be lower than the skin, and it is dim, the Kohen shall quarantine him again for seven, not again, but the Kohen, in this case as well, shall quarantine him for 7 days. And if it spreads on the skin, the Kohen shall pronounce him unclean. It is a lesion. But if the behar remains in its place, not spreading, it is the scar tissue of the inflammation, and the Kohen shall pronounce him clean. It's so interesting how the Torah gets into, how do we know when it's a skin ailment, just a dermatological issue, or whether it's a spiritual issue. So if certain things happen, it's a spiritual condition. If certain things are not happening, then it's just scar tissue on the inflammation. Just obviously, just rub some Neosporin in it and you'll be good to go. I'm kidding. I don't know if Neosporin would work, but that seems to be a catch-all. All right, so what's the point? The point is that we're reminded about the dangers of gossip and the dangers of Lashon Hara, or as the kids like to say, lushing. Right? It's the danger to lush, to just speak negatively about the other. And who do you have to go to? The Kohen. Why the Kohen? Because the Kohen, we know the one trait about the priestly family that's extolled in Jewish teachings is that Aaron and his sons, they were lovers of people. Their trademark is chesed. Their trademark sphera energy is chesed, which is loving kindness, love, and generosity and kindness of spirit. It says, we just read it in Pirkei Avot this past Shabbat afternoon, this this Shabbat, we started studying every Shabbat now, afternoon, after Mincha, we study one chapter of Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers. We do it in the summer because, you know, it's always good to be ethical, especially in the summer. So it says over there, Hillel, the great sage Hillel is quoted, he says, Hevi mitamidav shel Aaron, be of the disciples of Aaron. Ohev shalom, love peace. Rodev shalom, pursue peace. Ohev etabriyot, makarban la Torah, love the creatures, love every human being, and draw them close to Torah. And this is the hallmark of Aaron, the high priest, and his sons, the priests, his children, the priests. And that is a lover of people. Someone who loves other people, who loves peace. Loves peace. It says, the Talmud says that Aaron, or the Medrash maybe, it says that Aaron, the high priest, he would go around and make peace between couples. He would say, and between people that were quarreling with each other. So whether it's within the family or just amongst the community, he would say to one party, I spoke to the other. They want to make up, but they feel they want to get back in good terms, but they feel a little embarrassed. You know, would you be open to them if they apologize? Sure. Went to the other one. And also, yeah, sure, absolutely. And then when the next time these two people met, it all melted away because Aaron broke the ice. The point is that Aaron is all about love and the priests are all about love. In fact, it says that a priest who doesn't love everybody cannot serve and give a blessing, the priestly blessing to the people, because it has to be done from a place of love and warmth and acceptance. And so therefore, who do you take the mitzorah, the one who has sarat to, who do you take them to? The Kohen. You know why? Because they need a healthy dose of learning how to love the other. Because they've been gossiping about the other, about other people. Like, oh, you heard what happened to, right? Creating divisiveness between people. And so the healing process, first and foremost, is come to the Kohen. Let the Kohen infuse you with some love so that organically, you're not going to want to gossip about others. Because if you really love someone, you're not going to want to drag their name through the dirt. You're not going to want to gossip about them behind their back because you love them too much, right? Typically, what happens is, even in a gossipy conversation, when somebody mentions family, it's like, nope, can't, no, family, off limits, no gossip, right? I mean, hopefully. So this should be extended to everybody because, as I don't remember who said in the 80s, we are family. Remember that song? We are family. Who was that? The Village People? No. Is that YMCA? Same people, different people. Do we know? Whatever. Either way, somebody Google that. Who's
YMCA was a song of the Village People.
YMCA, right, was a song of the Village. Right, but I'm saying, is We Are Family the same group or no? Joy's got it.
Sister Sledge. Sister Sledge.
Sister Sledge?
Yeah.
I never... Oh, wow. Okay. I got to learn that name then, because I want to quote We Are Family, and I need to be informed as to who's saying it. Yeah, Sister Sledge. Nice. All right.
We'll go out on that.
Well, yes. We have to be careful, though, because YouTube, when we post this, you know, when we post the thing, if they hear audio from any recorded song, they get very particular. They start cutting out things from the video. I get notices, whatever. We'll have to, maybe we should just imagine it in our minds, because otherwise we're gonna get hit with a violation. Anyway, either way, listen, it's good to protect artists' rights, including Sister Sledge's rights, as we've learned today. So when it comes to Tzaraat, it's a spiritual ailment. It's due to the lack of sensitivity to the other, because we're gossiping about them and not being sensitive to them, not wanting to be gossiped about. So how do we heal it? You take the person to the Kohen. You, my friend, need a meeting with someone who loves people. You need a strong dose of love in your life, and so that you learn how to love and you won't gossip. So the Kohen is not going to start wagging the finger. Wait a second. Were you gossiping? No, the Kohen is going to model love. Unconditional, embracing the other person. I know you're impure. I love you anyway. And with that unconditional love, hopefully it rubs off on the person who had been gossiping so that they will unconditionally love the other so that they won't gossip anymore. Another reason why the Kohen is so important in this is because when someone was, when somebody was diagnosed with tzarat, with this affliction, they had to be quarantined outside of the camp. They had to actually, it wasn't just like stay at home. Like this is easy, I'm not easy, but whatever. This is one form of quarantine that we're familiar with. But the tzarat quarantine, when you actually had it, you had to go outside the typical residential area where everyone had their tents set up. There was like a special quarantine area outside the camp for those afflicted with tzarat. That wasn't fun. And so before you kick someone out, even temporarily, you got to make sure that you are looking out for their best interests and not trigger happy on that. So we give the power, if you will, to send someone in quarantine. We give that power only to the Kohen who loves everyone, who will look at somebody else with a positive eye, even the person who has the tzarat. Hopefully they'll be more generous in, what's the right way to say this? Not generous in calling tzarat, because that would mean they're trigger happy, but the other way, more generous in, do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, the Kohen would be less likely to just kick out people out of the camp saying, oh yeah, you got tzarat. But when
the benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt, exactly. It would be a little bit more generous and sorry?
Compassionate,
yeah. Generous, benefit of the doubt, compassionate toward the one who's got the skin ailment and less trigger happy. And of course, the lesson for us is here as well, right? First lesson that we had before was, well, when you love someone, you're not going to talk about them behind their back. You're not going to, you know, besmirch their character when you really love someone. So if that's happening, it just means we need more love. But it's also before you get stern with somebody, before you, you know, admonish someone, before you critique someone, make sure you love them, right? Make sure you're a Kohen. Before you send anyone out of the camp, so to speak, right? Before you get like all stern with anybody, the prerequisite is you got to be a Kohen. You got to have the love, and then we can talk. Then it's effective, because when a person realizes, when a person senses that you have their best interest in mind, then they'll hear your critique. But when they hear that you're just an angry person, not you, God forbid, but when they hear that, oh, this person's angry and this person's on their high horse, or this person like likes to preach, that's about them, it's not about me. Right? That's hollow. So if somebody criticizes, and the sense that you get, somebody's criticizing you, and the sense that you get is that person likes to criticize, well then you're not internalizing that. You're just like, oh, now I know less about myself now, but I'm learning a lot about you right now. You're a type of person that gets triggered easily and you like to blow up at people. All right, so that's you. But that doesn't transform anybody. What transforms when it's coming from a place of love? When it's coming from a place of love and care and compassion, right? Then you take it seriously. Yeah, go ahead, Donna.
We know till when this happened. I mean, because in modern days, we're not getting these ailments for gossiping.
Correct.
So do we know how long this lasts?
That's an excellent question. That is an excellent question. The answer is, I believe it ended with the destruction of the temple. I believe that that's when this era came to an end, the era of tzarat. The question is if it was there in the second temple or wasn't there. I would have to look it up. I don't recall. But it didn't last, you know, into modern times, as we know. And the reason that's explained in Kabbalah for this is because back then, people were on a bit of a higher spiritual level, so the impropriety was only skin deep. Whereas today, it's not just skin deep, it's usually a little bit deeper than that, if that makes sense. So back then, a person's skin would break out, their physical skin would break out with the spiritual impropriety. Nowadays, we're a bit more desensitized to the whole thing, so it's kind of like if a person has a very healthy diet, and then eat something that's not in that framework, the skin might break out with, you know, something, might have a reaction to it. Whereas if we trained, this is not a good thing, but we train the body with all sorts of, you know, not so healthy things, then one more unhealthy thing is not really gonna cause any, you know, commotion. but the skin's not going to break out necessarily because it's used to the various things. It's, you know, and think of a toxin, right? So something, or another example that's brought in Kabbalah, think about a diamond. You take a diamond and you make a scratch in it, you've ruined the diamond. Whereas you take a piece of coal and you make a scratch in it, no big deal, right? It's that you don't notice it and it doesn't cause any harm. So back then, they were pure, they were diamonds. Their whole biology, spiritual, physical, was refined, and therefore, you know, gossip triggered the skin. After the temple, we had diminished state of holiness. So the skin doesn't just, it's not just skin deep, it's a little bit deeper. This is not letting us off the hook, by the way, saying, well, then just go ahead and gossip because it doesn't matter anymore. This is just saying we have more work to do. And this is also not trying to put us, I'm not trying to put us down and say, well, we're, you know, we're good for nothings. It's just saying that, you know, we have our own advantages, but, you know, we're, as far as, you know, spiritual propriety, we're not necessarily as pure as the great ancient people used to be. For what it's worth, that's one explanation why we don't have it. But I think your question was, when did it stop? I wish I remembered if it was after the first temple or even if it went through the second temple. I don't recall. But it hasn't been around for a good few thousand years. All right, so that's it for today. Tomorrow we're going to pick up the conversation. You should know that there's a lot of text verses on the laws of Tzorat. So we're just getting started. But what we see here is already a few very important lessons. Number one, the need to love. When we love, we don't want to hurt the other, even indirectly, even through gossip. So, you know what, let me add one more way of framing this. There's two ways to combat gossip. One way is to say, gossip is terrible. Gossip is bad. And you have communities in which they study texts, Jewish communities, Orthodox communities, in which a big emphasis is on studying texts that speak about not gossiping and how bad it is to gossip. Chabad is a bit different. Chabad, we don't necessarily study those texts that admonish gossip. Why? Not because gossip is okay, but because the focus is on the other side, which is love. And so when you're focused, when you love, you don't need to be told not to gossip. You won't want to gossip. It's just not part of the lexicon. It's just not part of the thought process. When you really care about someone, you're not going to turn your back on them, or you're not going to stab them in the back, behind their back. You're just not going to do it. So again, both are valid approaches, but I think what we see here by the mitzora, by the person who has the tzarat affliction, needing to go to the Kohen, and not to a finger wagger, right? But going to a person who unconditionally loves, I think that's a powerful message. What's the antidote to gossip? Not harshness, but love. Letting them know that they are loved, inspiring them to love others. And when you love, you're not going to hurt. It's going to, not because you're not allowed to, but because you don't want to. And that's a more effective approach. All right, so all you need is love. Who's saying that? Someone else that we can't play. Either way, all we need is love, and we are family, and with love, love conquers all, etc. Now we're getting into a musical almost.
The mamas and the papas.
The mamas and the papas. I like that. See, family. Sorry?
It might have been the Beatles.
Or the Beatles. Yes. All you need is love. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Don't worry. YouTube is not going to flag my singing. They'll be like, oh, that? Nah. There's no violation there. You're not getting close to the original. No need to strike that from the record. Okay, good. So that's that for today. So, sorry? Oh, so the moral of the story is, let's love, and automatically we're not going to do someone in by speaking ill of them. All right, thank you for joining. It's been great to study together today. Don't forget, tomorrow, this whole week, we're on DPP as usual. Oh, Wednesday, I haven't checked the weather, but why not? It should be good, right? It's gorgeous outside today. I'm just going to assume it's going to be Good Wednesday, and therefore we're on. So order your spicy peach lunch or just show up without lunch. Either way, it'll be a blast. I'm going to try to work on, I just reminded myself now about the canopies. I'm going to speak to my folks about canopies because that can definitely help. Let me see where that, I know I was told last week, I asked about it too late after the fact, but I was told that it was off-site. So let me find out what is entailed with making that happen for Wednesday, but I'll try to do that. And otherwise, tonight is RCS, Rosh Chodesh Society, a great class taught by Dina Schusterman on the joy that stems from healthy relationships. So that's idea of connection, relationships, and love. That is tonight. If you're not yet signed up for it, you can always jump in. You can do the whole course, or you can just do class by class. You can just jump in on that. Let me know. Otherwise, that's tonight. Tomorrow night is, I don't think we have anything tomorrow night. Wednesday night is Torah studies. I'm just thinking out loud. Okay, Friday night is the Shabbat dinner. Join us, Shabbat Under the Stars. And then next week, we have a lot of fun things, including the new JLI course, etc. All right, I'm going to let you all go. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you soon. Bye, everybody.
Okay.
Bye, Matt. Bye, Donna. Bye, Joy. Bye, Ray. Take care. Great to see you.